Hey guys, it's Josh Henkin here, and I haven't done an interview in a while. That's because, honestly, we only do interviews with people we think are incredibly interesting. And if you follow DVRT long enough, you know this man very well. Today, I am very honored to have strength coach Robert Dos Remedios, who we affectionately call Coach Dos here. Normally, you know, I think people get introduced with very, you know, sterile introductions, but I think Coach Dos is a lot more to us than just a guy, another strength coach. He's had a huge influence to our programming of DVRT. A lot of you may know him from his very innovative MRT and HIIT protocols. And I think a lot of you would just be, you know, obviously fascinated with the fact that he's one of the few legitimate strength coaches I call out there, because he's done this for over 30 years, and not only has he done it, but he's done it with a wider range of populations, obviously specializing in athletic development with pretty much every sport and every level of athlete imaginable. And he's someone I go to for mentoring and ideas and problem solving. So I'm very honored to welcome Coach Dos today.
Wow, that was a pretty big time intro right there, buddy.
Hey, well, that's what you get for being on medication, you know.
I was gonna say, you feeling okay right now?
My pneumonia is getting a little bit better, so if you guys hear some coughing, don't worry, I'm not dying quite yet. But I mean it, Coach Dos. I mean, obviously, you've had a huge impact on what we do, and I think you've had a huge impact on the industry. And ironically, while most people know you probably for MRT and your innovative HIIT protocols, I actually first learned about you with more athletic development and what you were called with your chaos training. And I know you just have a new program out there, and you know, I'm the one that sort of was bugging you. Like, I think this is awesome for general pop as well as athletic development. But before we get into that, can you just explain what chaos is and how you came up with it?
Yeah, so chaos is something that we, you know, it's just we didn't reinvent anything. I mean, we just kind of took stuff that we knew that was out there, just open drills, like open athletic drills, whether it's coach-led or rabbit drills or verbal or visual cues, so that you were basically doing kind of chaotic patterns. So you weren't closed like three-cone drills and stuff like that. So what we did was just kind of, you know, we started running with the Jim Liston and myself. Jim Liston's up in Toronto now in the MLS, and he was with LA Galaxy back in the days. We used to do a lot of stuff together when he was down here in Southern California, and we actually came up and said, hey, we should start, like, you know, kind of like laying things out for people, like, and saying, like, these are our lead up drills and these are the things important. And so we came up with all these different drills and then the acronyms and all this kind of stuff that we have. But it was really, you know, it's just tag, right? When you're a little kid and you're playing tag and you're juking people and stuff. I mean, it's basically that. So what we did was just kind of clean things up and kind of have levels to it. We kind of build on levels. And then we started doing that. We presented on this in 2003 at the NSCA National Conference in Indianapolis. And but at that time, we were already using it, you know, for 10 years, just the concepts of it. So we laid it out, got it out, and I put out a DVD shortly after that, and it was really cool, but it was just kind of outdated as far as just some of the things we were saying, even some of the research. So that's when we came out this year with Chaos 2.0, which basically dives a little deeper into the research and the background, and then really kind of focuses more on the preparation of it and the, you know, all the concepts that we talk about so much, and you guys talk about, which is like our ability to handle load. So, you know, the decelerative forces and things like that. So our load absorption. So a lot of the explosive stuff, but like rewinding it a bit and coming back to how important it is to have that strength base and unilateral strength and core strength and multiple planes, and then our ability to decelerate that load, you know, so obviously from a performance standpoint, and then obviously and that's going to lead to an injury prevention aspect as well.
Well, my first question is, what's a DVD? No, I'm just kidding.
Do they have those anymore? Do people sell DVDs anymore?
You know, the funny part is Jessica was bragging she had, like, old CDs, and I'm like, oh, yeah, but you have no place to play them. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
You know, I think just to help people really understand what you're talking about, I think, you know, When I go around talking to coaches and we talk about functional training, and they give me the line of, oh, it's training for life. And I really don't think people know what that means. I mean, that's not really what functional training is, but that's the philosophy. I think what you are training, I mean, you hit on some key points about deceleration. I think also the unpredictability of what chaos tries to teach you is really like far more applicable for both sport and general population than people think. So like, let me ask you, at least from an athletic side, let's start there and then we'll get into the general pop side. Obviously, you create chaos to develop a solution. What problem were you trying to solve in the development of your athletes?
Well, we were having issues with, you know, there's actually quite a lot of research on this. When you look at agility training in general, and then you look at like the leveling up of that, and you start to go to unpredictable or having an opponent-based decision making. So we start to see more injuries. A lot of these non-contact ACL injuries are occurring because of that, right? That kind of stop or start when you don't know. Like, it's great to have good breaks. And it's great to be able to stop, but it's better to be able to stop when you don't know you're going to have to stop.
Exactly.
Like, and that's the level up part. Like, you can build a bulletproof kind of system essentially in your body with your strength and your ability to decelerate. But then if you don't know it's going to happen so rapidly, you know, like most athletic things happen right in that first, you know, 2/10 of a second. But that's essentially where we have to decelerate or reaccelerate like immediately. So that's where all the injuries are going to happen. You know, that's a sweet spot for that. So our thing was teaching, you know, the problem was that, right? We started looking, especially at the female athletes, especially some of the longer females that we have, the taller girls, you know, their ability to decelerate. And so we put them through a lot. Like, my philosophy has always been like, even with conditioning, you know, we condition so hard that games aren't that hard, right? So, like, you're obviously going to have different, you know, things that are going on in your brain and mentally and things like that. And you're going to get tired for those things. But we want to train so that the game's not that hard. Well, the same thing with our drills. I want to drill you so hard and put all these demands on your body and your braking system and your ACL and all that stuff, all that sweet stuff that we worry about, that we're going to drill that over and over again so that when it happens in real time, in real life, we've already been there, right? I mean, we can't obviously, you know, replicate it completely, but we can get pretty close, I think. And the only way to do that is through these chaotic drills, right, where they're reacting to something and then having to do something at that point. So that essentially was the problem. We were seeing, you know, you have, like, tone drill warriors, right? I mean, that's why there's places you go to train for the combines, because they teach you how to beat the test. You're getting better at the test because you're learning exactly how many steps to take, when to decelerate, what your hips do. Like, but in real life, we can't do that. So that was my thing, was that most of the sports that we deal with, most sports in general are chaotic, that demands are going to be there. And then most people aren't very good at it because they get it in their drills with their teams, but they're not getting it in the training. So, and I think the eye-opener for me was, one of the eye-openers was, you look at coaches and you look at like football and you watch the DBs go, and all their drills and warm-ups are reactive. They're reacting to the coach and they're reacting to the ball and they're reacting to an opponent. And that's the best way that football coaches feel to get their players ready. That's what I'm thinking. If that's the best way we can get them ready to play this game, then why aren't we training like that? So that was kind of, you know, in a nutshell, we weren't doing these drills when I was playing football. So it's something that, you know, just the light needed to be turned on, essentially.
It sounds better than the Josh method, which was if you just never go that fast as an athlete, you won't get hurt. But that's a different methodology. In all seriousness, though, like, I mean, it must frustrate. I mean, I think what you said was important. You said, like, developing breaks is a good thing. And I think maybe that's the where we see people stop in their training. And you could speak about this more so, like, on social media, you see it all the time. People say they're doing athletic development. They're doing all these cone drills or hops and jumps. And they look like they're being athletic, but they're always in very predictable environments. And it seems like that's a nice foundation, but the higher level stuff is learning how to react to something that you don't know is coming. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. And there's a place for those, right? I mean, it's great to do jumping drills and stick landings and even closed drills, because some people don't have the body awareness to even run a three cone drill or a two cone drill or a you know, eye test or something. So like just to, like that part of our warm-ups is always to get them in a drill. And you know, what do you do with your center of gravity? What do you do with your base of support? Where's your plant foot? You know, like, you have to go through those things. But I kind of, you know, Lee Taft is obviously the guy when you start talking about anything speed. And sometimes, you know, you just got to go back to his basics when he talks about body positioning and things like that. And a lot of times you let people run through the drill. You don't, like, overcoach it, because if I have 25 athletes in front of me and I start coaching the heck out of all these problems that are going to happen, but none of them have that problem, then we're just wasting time. So, like, you'll see in Chaos that what we do is the athletes that I even have in the video aren't mine. So a lot of the drills they're doing for the very first time. So you'll see some mistakes happen, but then we coach from there as well. So I like to let them go, even if it's like general population stuff, like let them do the drill and then correct from there. Because sometimes we just have this crazy thing where we want to, like, go through it. Like, I'm doing a PowerPoint or something, and I'm like, okay, your knees might cave, so when they do this, or you're probably going to have too narrow of a base, you know, like, and they don't. So, like, so we like to let them kind of run a little bit. So it's a little bit different than if we're doing something like in the weight room, I think. But just in general, the chaotic drills kind of, we let them kind of develop a little bit more, and then we coach them there. You'll see it on the videos, you know, with athletes that I've never worked with. So it's actually, I actually like that even better, just because it doesn't seem scripted at that point, because there's some sketchy stuff that happens sometimes, but that's all part of the process, you know, of them getting better at those drills.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, you know, again, we live in an age where everyone thinks everything looks perfect all the time, and especially when you deal, it doesn't matter, athletes or general pop, like, things aren't perfect all the time, but it goes back to that Soviet concept of imperfection training, right? Like, what happens when things aren't perfect? Like, how do you prepare for that? I remember, like, some of those drills we did in basketball, and they were probably the most demanding, both mentally and physically, just because you did have to be both mentally and physically present, and, you know, be able to turn on and off so fast. It was pretty, you know, just draining. And I think, you know, a lot of times we have a lot of high school coaches, you know, that follow us, and even some college coaches. And I feel like they're in the mode now where they feel like the conditioning part, and I know you're a big conditioning guy, is like the thing you spend the most time on when you spend time, like, out in the field or running. But, like, where does Chaos fit, and, like, how much time should people be devoting to it, and, like, how do you think it fits in the overall plan of the development of the athlete?
You know, for us, when we would use it, it would just be part of our speed training. So, like, I very rarely would do any linear speed stuff with any of our sport teams. Just, I mean, football maybe, just because, you know, we time 40s. Baseball, you know, we'll time some base running stuff, but for the most part, everything was pretty much the Chaos stuff. So we would plug it into, like, days where we're going to work on our speed. But I think the best part is, it goes back to what you just said. You know, a lot of the research talks about fatigue as well being this huge factor, right? And, like, our mechanics and our breaking down of our movement. So what I like to do is actually, like, one day a week, like, during the season when we're conditioning, like, for football, we condition a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Monday's kind of like a longer, you know, more taxing day. They're not in pads. Tuesday's kind of a pretty good day. Max half gassers, 100, stuff like that. And Wednesday's always like a Chaos day. So, like, Wednesday, our conditioning is, I set up, you know, work rest ratio times, and we condition doing all these things where it's, you know, a clap or a whistle or a rabbit. So, and it's not very long. The whole session's maybe like 10 minutes, 10, 12 minutes total. And that's running multiple teams through, but we're making sure we're getting, you know, rest. But then at the end, I'll start to, you know, whittle it down and take the rest, you know, shorten the rest even more, so they're not getting adequate rest anymore, and they're having to perform these things just for the last couple of minutes of the session in that really fatigued state. So, you know, because that's key, that's huge, you know, like we talked about that already, like being able to break when you don't know you have to break, but being able to break when you don't know you have to break and you're tired as hell. So that's one of the things that I think makes it so good. And they're very taxing. That's why we talk about general pop. From a metabolic standpoint, breaking in general is very, very tough. So that makes heart rate shoot through the roof. That makes work, you know, seem much harder. It's much, much tougher. So, and you're going to get sore. Like people, I've seen people like, oh, I did these, we love your, you know, doing these drills where you're working the brakes with the bands. And we did them for a 30-minute class. I'm like, you guys did landings for 30 minutes? Like, you know, like, do you understand that nobody's going to be able to walk like for the next 2 days. So you got to be aware of these types of things, that they're just so taxing. The eccentric work's so taxing. It's so tiring because of the stop and start. You know, I'm sure you would much rather run, back when you were playing basketball, you'd rather run a hundred, you know, hundreds rather than running suicides,
right?
Because I mean, you're looking at probably the same distance, but you're obviously having to stop and start and stop and start. So very, very taxing, you know. I'm sure you've had your share of suicides in your days.
I've had nightmares, flashbacks.
Just the squeaking sound alone just kind of would the chills.
I got PTSD.
It fits in there in your speed development, but it can also really play a huge role in your conditioning and your energy system development too. And then it can be a real specific type of training for that, you know, especially at that far end of the lactic acid stuff. And two, you know, you don't want to do a ton of it, but as a finisher, as a last part of a conditioning session, I think that stuff's great.
And before we delve into like the general pop side, because again, I think, you know, sometimes people can hear this stuff and they're like, oh, that's good for athletes, but not good for me. I want to ask you sort of touched upon it already. Mm-hmm. Just maybe like the top three mistakes you think people in applying. I mean, you sort of mentioned the frequency or the volume of it, but you mentioned things like work rest ratios. Like, what are three things like you really see commonly misused when you're talking about this type of training for athletes?
Well, the first thing is not getting enough rest. So like, if you expect somebody to be really twitchy and look really sharp in a drill, especially a rabbit drill, you got to give quite a bit of rest. So, you know, like when you think of like drill, like a lot of these drills are like 10 seconds or less, right? Because after that, it just starts to deteriorate. We can make it longer, but then it starts to go into more of a conditioning thing. But if I want twitchiness and I want sharp cuts and I want good breaks, it's going to be like 8-10 seconds, right? Of them just going as hard as they can. We're going to rest. I mean, if you want them to replicate that effort and look the same way, you're going to need, you know, probably, you know, at least a minute. So you're talking, you know, probably, you know, like a 10, you know, like 1-5, 1-6, 1-8 rest. I mean, you're going to need that if you want them to do it. Now, you might not have that kind of time, so you can cut it back. But if you try to go 1-1 or even 1-2, it's just going to look like slop. Right, and then you're not going to get that sharpness, and just like in anything, it just turns into aerobics anyway at that point, because you're not going to have any kind of drop in heart rate. So we want to make sure that they're getting that. Now, if you want to make it more of a conditioning thing, then you can start going into your, you know, shorter rest intervals and maybe draw the drill out a little bit longer. You know, 15 seconds, that's a long time though. 15 seconds is a really, really, it's eternity. When you're doing something where a coach is leading something on the hand signals or whistles or commands, or there's a rabbit, it's brutal. So it's I don't know if there's much that's tougher. I mean, we've done it in the sand. I guess that makes it even tougher. But, like, yeah, that would be the worst. You know, do a rabbit drill, sal drill in sand for 15 seconds. It, you know, I think you'd rather run, you know, suicides at that point.
It's a tough call there. Yeah. Horrible versus horrible. That's why it's not fun to train with Coach Dose, by the way, if you've never done it. And it's, you know, the funny part is, again, like I said, you know, I sort of mentioned before, like, people think, like, oh, this is great for athletes, but, you know, that's not for me. And you and I have talked extensively about this, you know, people say, oh, train like an athlete. It's like, no, you don't want to train like an athlete because that sucks, but you want to train to be athletic. And when I think about that, honestly, my first place my mind goes to is stuff like this. Like, have you seen success with, like, general pop people using this just for that very reason alone?
Yeah, we used to do these, we did this Nike Train LA thing, and we incorporated these kind of chaos drills in one of our stations, and people love, I mean, it was like probably the biggest hit of all the stations that we would have, whether it was TRX and stuff like that. Like, they love that kind of stuff if we had the space and the ability to do that, you know, because it's a competitive environment. So, like, when I think like boot camps and like Group X, it's really, really cool. I taught a class, you know, 20 years ago for the Spectrum Clubs, which was like Sports Club LA and these big clubs. And it was called, like, I think it was called RAW. You know, you always had to have, like, some kind of cool acronym. It was like RAW Athletic Workout or something like that. And it was all this kind of stuff. So we'd have ladder drills and we'd have, you know, lots of different types of plyos, but a lot of the drills were these coach-led chaotic drills because they were so metabolically taxing. So, you know, for general pop, it actually is really cool. But then when I think of how much emphasis Chaos 2.0 has on prep and breaks, now we go back to the jumps and the landings and the sticks and the jump variations. And then we go back to the fact that we need to be programming power in everybody's workouts, like no matter what the age is, no matter what the population. So the power is huge. And then we go one step further, right? We say power is, but our ability to decelerate is more important, especially now when we start to talk about general pop and older, elderly populations. For sure, they have to be able to stop when they don't know they're going to have to stop. And that's, the vast majority of their injuries are happening when they fall. Why are they falling? Are they losing coordination? Maybe, but a lot of times it's missteps and they can't put the brakes on. So our ability to have brakes goes in so many directions, has so many fingers for every population. Obviously from an elite football player, basketball player, tennis player, whatever, that's key. But like for my mom, who's, turning 88 this year, key as well, right? I mean, I want her to be able to stop if, the car runs the red light and she has to stop in the middle of the crosswalk. Like, I need her to be able to do that. So it's really, really important. And that's why I think it has so many applications to general pop, the drills. They don't have to be the crazy chaos in a box stuff that you'll see on the videos, but go back to the prep stuff, go back to the jump stuff, go back to the landing stuff, the snapbacks and things like that we can actually apply and take and use that force reduction, these force reduction strategies that we basically highlight in the Chaos 2.0.
Yeah, what cracks me up is, I think people at first glance, if they just took a snapshot of, looking at the video, they'd be like, whoa, that's really intense. I don't know about this. But then we have people doing, obstacle course races, 5Ks, and, weekend warriors, and going for crazy hikes and this and that. And they're like, well, it's no worse than that. It's actually going to make them better at those things. I mean, is that, I guess, right. The question is, how would you, I think you sort of answer the question by saying focus a lot of prep work, but for a general pop environment, what type of frequency, what type of volume of the workout would you be looking at, and where would you maybe be putting this into the workout?
I think it more or less, if you're just at some, if you have general pop and you're a trainer and you have somebody a couple times a week, you maybe have it in as a change up workout itself. If you want to do more of a metabolic workout, or you do it more of as a finisher, take the last 6 or 7 minutes of a workout and take them through some drills, mirroring you doing, but also that the jump training stuff is part of your explosive component that you should be having in your program is part of it too. So I said, it has a lot of facets to it, but as far as the drills go, I think they're great finishers. You do something, like a 10:50 kind of thing where they're doing the chaotic drill and then they're resting, or taking it down and going even, shorter and going 10:20s, doing Tabata style, reverse Tabata style finishers, and keeping it pretty simple, but also having them have to, react to a stimulus that they don't know when it's going to happen, that kind of thing. I actually had tracks back when BJ was doing all the music tracks, mm-hmm. and all the timer tracks. We had it so that we had it for the iPod. What's an iPod, right? they had it for iPods where it was, I'd have 5-second drills, 10-second drills, and 15-second drills with random beeps. So they could be playing their music in the background, and it would give you a go, and they'd go, and then it would have a beep, and then you would have to stop. So I'd say, pick a pattern, shuffle, slide, karaoke, sprint, back pedal. And so people could do that, right? And that was pretty cool, because then you could be like, okay, for 5 minutes, I'm going to do a little finisher for 5 minutes with this. And I'm by myself. I don't have somebody leading it, but I have these random beeps, that are going on that plays over my own music track. So it enables, that was a great way to add some conditioning to your workout. And, I always think the finisher or the exclamation mark on your workout could be something like that. Especially if you talk about most of our training, most of the, when you and I go do stuff at Equinox, I always say, what are some goals your clients have? It's always fat loss, fitness, that horrible word, toning, get stronger, feel better. It all comes back to work capacity. And these are the things that these kinds of drills are just work capacity, big time, when we think about what types of demands they put on us.
It's funny, as you were talking, I had a flashback to when I had my facility. I think one of my clients' favorite things, and generally, it's a love-hate thing, they hated doing it, but they loved it, at the same time was, you know, I would take them. There was a park by us that had a sand volleyball court. And just to get them out of the mental environment of being in the gym, I would take them there and we'd do these type of things. Like, and by the time we did a warm-up, by the time we did some of the landing prep stuff, by the time we did those drills, like, that was their session. But, you know, I had 50, 60-year-old people doing this, and they just loved it because it was just so out of the context of what they thought of working out. And it was, like, goal-oriented. It was something they had to be present with. I mean, do you find that people's, I mean, even like you said, like, you know, people that normally have maybe never been an athlete, like, this seems almost empowering in a way to do this type of stuff.
Yeah, no, and I think it goes back to CrossFit, right? Like, why do people gravitate to that? You know, it makes them feel like they're an athlete. And so a lot of these things, and a lot of the even Group X class that you see nowadays is kind of has that whole athletic vibe to it. Like, oh, this is what athletes do. Look, we're using ladders today, or we're doing this with med balls. So, yeah, totally. I mean, and that's the whole thing, right? I mean, part of the sell or part of the buy-in is getting somebody to actually adhere to stuff and work hard. And sometimes, you know, I just think of, like, traditional, like, boot camp stuff. People like it because there's, like, a competitiveness to it, right? And there's, like, a camaraderie there, and everybody's kind of going through the same kind of anguish together, you know?
Yeah, misery loves company.
Yeah, like, exactly. Changing, yeah, there's, and, you know, I used to say that in some of my drills on some of my presentations on conditioning. You know, there's no greater glue or bond than, like, mutual, you know, pain and agony, right?
Right,
like,
it's true.
That go through this kind of, like, you know, made up war, you know, of, like, all this crazy adversity and make it through it. Those are the groups you want, right? Those are the whole brotherhood thing that you have when you have teams. So, like, same thing when you have, you know, like, gyms that have that environment, or like a boot camp, or, you know, doing these kinds of drills. And that's what we saw when we were doing the Nike stuff in Train LA, is people kind of getting behind people and being competitive in these drills. And if I was the rabbit, I was going to shake you, you know, like, that was my whole thing. And then if you were the rabbit, you aren't going to be able to shake me, kind of thing. So, and then at the same time, it's almost like you're tricking them, right? Because they're doing this drill and you're looking at it biomechanically and you're like, oh my God, look at what's going on here at the hip, and look what's going on at the knee. Look at all these demands at the knee, and when they're crossing over and they're opening their hips, and when they're sprinting, like, and they don't care. They're just doing a drill, right? So you're, like, able to have all these great things happening with them. And that's why I think these drills are, like, somebody hit me up the other day and they said, hey, you know, I have a youth soccer team. Like, would these drills be good for them? I'm like, are you kidding? Like, this is what they should be doing.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is all they should be doing. You know, these kinds of drills, like tag, like Jim Liston used to say, like, you want to see chaos, you know, get your kids, your yard and, you know, turn the sprinklers on and throw the hose on them and watch what happens. Right. Like, right. You want to see, like, just people ducking and, you know, juking and shifting and rolling around. Like, it's just like, that's the ultimate chaos, right? Just, like, turn the hose on somebody, basically. And you start to see, and now if you look from the hips down, like, oh my God, it's like as crazy as it's ever going to get, you know? Like, I would say, like, I think one of the things when we talk about, like programming or needs analysis is, like, I used to watch volleyball. This is when I first was starting to train. And obviously we watch women's volleyball for different reasons sometimes, but, like, I like to watch from the demand. So I say, like, you look from, like, the waist down, right? And then you just don't even watch the ball and just watch what happens. And it just looks like nothing makes sense. Like, nothing makes sense at all.
Makes
what's
all
going
the rules,
on.
Right? The quote-unquote rules.
Yeah, and they're all, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, let's not even talk about knees over toes. You know, like, I think I sent you those pictures of, like, liberos in these positions where their foot's on the ground behind them and their knees touching the ground in front of them as they're digging a ball. Like, these are things, I'm not saying we need to train like that, but we need to be aware that this stuff happens. You know, it happens a lot for some of these positions. It happens on a regular basis. So just looking at that, you start to say, like, what should my training be like for that? You know, obviously they're playing, they're going to practice, but what can I do in my training in the weight room and then my conditioning sessions and my speed sessions that could somehow help these athletes with that nuts, that craziness that I'm looking at right now, you know? So that's kind of where it all started, you know? But I think one of the things, going back to, you know, like, you think of tag, one of the things that I have in this video, which is really cool, and the guys at Pixel Mob were amazing to be able to get this, is I said the eye opener is, to me, the light bulb is the sound you can hear the difference between a closed and an open drill just by listening to the feet. Like, it's night and day. So we have a clip on the gym floor where they're running a line drill, and then we run the same exact drill pattern, except for they go on my clap. They're going to change directions on my clap. And it's night and day with the sound, which means it's night and day with the force that they're putting into the ground. And now we just go back to Newton's laws, right? And now we start to say, if they're putting that much more into the ground, they're going to get that much more out of the ground, right? So why are they doing that? Because they don't know they have to stop. They have to stop, and it's like a much more urgent type of stopping and restarting again. So to me, that was the thing. Like, why are we doing drills, these other drills at all, really? Like, why are we spending much time on that, even with little kids? Get them running around and get them stopping and starting and changing their patterns, and tell them which foot to stop with sometimes, because otherwise they'll always stop the same foot. So all these types of things came together, you know, years ago, and then all we've done is just kind of build on it. And research has come along, you know, well after the fact, and you already know this, right? I mean, we don't have to have research on a max lunge. I don't need a scientist to tell me that that works, right? I mean, but there probably will be at some point. So, you know, what happened over the years is that research started just kind of reaffirming the stuff that we've been doing for all the practical, commonsensical kind of reasons that we knew it would work, right? The sport specific stuff. But then research starts coming out on injury prevention, and we, you know, we recommend open drills. You know, we recommend 1v1 style drills, you know, with an opponent to place those demands to decrease risk of ACL, non-contact ACL injuries. Like, all these things started coming. So it's kind of cool that that happens. And we know there's just going to be more and more research on it. But it's also funny how this is so new to a lot of coaches who've been coaching a long time that just don't do these kinds of drills. Because, and you wonder, like, you're doing speed training sessions and you still got, you know, football coaches, you know, spending vast majority of their strength coaches working with football on arm action sprint drills, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
whole business
when do you,
on that.
Like when do you, when is a football, even a wide receiver, when does a wide receiver ever get to sprint vertically? He's going to get jammed, first of all. He's going to get hands on him. So, like, now you already got a problem, right? So, and that's chaotic itself because you don't know where the hands are going to go. So you have to think of your next move. So, like, I get it. Speed's awesome, but most of these kids are running track. They're going to get that speed work there when they're running track in the off season. So I'm sure not going to spend time. Like, I'll use, like, to use parachutes and sleds and stuff like that, because it gets, for me, it just gets them to run harder. So, like, that's a good thing. Anything I can do to get those guys to run harder and let them have some fun and do some overspeed bungee stuff sometimes, you know, so they can feel faster. I mean, put it on alignment, it's liberating to feel, you know, to feel like you're running faster. Like you're running downhill, you know. It's like when you're a big kid, you run downhill, you start feeling all of a sudden like you got this great stride and you feel like an athlete for the first time in your life. So we let them do that kind of stuff. But it's such a small part of our training that, you know, most of our stuff is all this chaos stuff for our speed stuff.
You know, it's funny, like, Lee Taff and I were talking at the Athletes Acceleration Program in Laverne, and we were sort of joking how we're surprised that, like, Capture the Flag hasn't been rebranded as, like, the Hungarian speed method of, like, dominance or something like that. Because Capture the Flag has a lot of the same elements of tag, right? It's probably one of the best games that kids play as in PE. For that very reason. So, I mean, we have a couple more minutes, so I just want to hit you up with a couple of things just to help people really understand the immense value of what you're talking about. You know, it's funny, it just reminds me because it coincides, like, yesterday I saw Mike Boyle post an article about, you know, sort of questioning if we're training the hamstrings right, because the hamstrings are really need these accelerators. And it's funny, when I talked to Jessica about it, she's like, duh. But, like, most of us train them as, like, you know, muscle force producers. So it seems like so much, like, knee resiliency and hip quality, because, you know, hips are these triplanar muscles and all these things, like, because when we think about clients, whether they, you know, go jogging or, like, I think of classically when clients would say to me their knees hurt when they go down from a hike, things like that. I'm sure you get that with a lot of athletes. Like, this is actually injury resiliency as much as it is conditioning and performance, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's funny, one of the research articles that I have in this Chaos 2.0 talks about some of the differences with males and female athletes. And, you know, because that's the whole thing. That's the $24,000 question, right? Like, why do females have so many more ACLs? And so, you know, you start talking about, you know, just kind of like limb length. You start talking about, hormonal stuff, right? You talk about, like, they don't land. They tend to land straight-legged more with more, you know, less knee flexion. But one of the things that they talked about was that hamstring thing and how the girls tend to be more quad dominant. So they rely on the quads to do all that decelerating stuff. So that plays a huge role too. So now you say, okay, you better make sure your training, right, addresses this. I mean, should address it anyway if it's quote functional, right? But like, you better be thinking about, you know, non mirror muscles a lot with these athletes, you know. So that's a huge part, and that's another cool thing about the research showing that, and then saying like, this is why it's really important now for female athletes especially, you know. And then, yeah, like, and you brought up obstacle course training, stuff like that. That's pretty athletic stuff. So now we start talking, that's a big thing, and that's people are going and joining gyms just to that, to get in shape via, well, now that this kind of stuff should be a component, you know. And just, you know, Alan's really into all that stuff now too. You know, I know he's excited about this kind of chaos stuff too. So that's a huge thing. I totally forgot what the question was.
You answered it. You answered it. And so it's like, you know, I don't want people to think like it's, you know, I think we like to categorize things like, oh, this is performance training, and this is injury prevention, and this is part of it. You know what I'm saying? And I think, you know, what the wonderful, the cool things about the chaos stuff is, it's kind of everything. It's, you do get conditioning, you do get the injury resiliency, you know, you do get the performance aspect, and I think it's applicable. It's, you know, is your 60-year-old person going to look like a Division I athlete? Hell no. But, you know, let them work at the level that they're at, you know, whether it's changing distances and volumes and how you introduce it. I think that's really key, because, like you said, you know, your mom, like, so many, you know, older people, like you said, power is such a big thing, because their number one concern is falls. And as I always tell people, like, it's not like you're staying there and all of a sudden you fall. Like, it's because you can't decelerate yourself, right? I mean, like, yeah, I mean, this stuff is so important if we're going to call what we're doing functional training. Like, it's a quality that, don't you think, most people just completely miss altogether for the most part?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's most trainers don't have that component in, like, programmed. They might have it in there once in a while, and it's almost sometimes maybe by chance.
Right.
But it needs to be a part. I mean you've got Harvard, you know, med school talking about this, like, that, you know, coming out with position paper stuff on this kind of stuff. So, like, it's a thing, you know. It's like, I'm not trying to make this a thing. It's a real thing. So, so this is something that's truly important. Obviously, when you're talking athletics, it should be, like, the first thing on your list, you know, when you're getting in there in the weight room. Like, how am I addressing explosive power today, you know, whether it's Olympic lifts or jump stuff or sandbag stuff. There's got to be something, you know, that's going to work, you know, the triple quadruple extension stuff. But then also the landing, like, that's the whole thing too, right? We got load absorption is such a huge thing with performance and injury prevention and metabolically challenging stuff. Like, you force somebody to, like, I would say people like want to jump. Okay, I'm going to jump for 10 seconds. Like jump and stick it in that bottom position in that perfect athletic position and have them hold it for 3 seconds and just do 10 reps of that. Like, they're going to be so gassed from just having to decelerate and then hold that position that they're not used to. And then the other thing is, you know, look at General Pop, right? We think about, like, the most neglected plane, like frontal plane, just shuffle, slide somebody, right? And just have them go on your switch commands or have them go on a whistle or whatever and have them change directions. And do that drill, and it could, right? If you have an elite basketball player, it's going to look totally different.
Right.
If you have a 55-year-old client, it's going to look totally different. But the demands are the same, and they're still getting, even if they're going at a quarter of their speed, they're still having to stop and start, and then they're in that uncomfortable plane, you know, and then take it another level and make them karaoke that pattern back and forth so that occasionally when they hit stop, you know, they're crossed over and they're in a, you know, a difficult position. Like, just things like that. I mean, you can live on those drills alone, and you'll see how uncomfortable people are just moving side to side. It's uncanny, you know. You've talked about
it. Eye-opening.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and that's when, you know, you see me do that, it perform better. So what happens, right? The snipers come out. People start falling. Like, they can't stop when they're moving laterally, especially if they're going any kind of speed at all, any kind of effort. Now you start to go karaoke, and it's like, you know, you got a shooter in the rafters because the people are going down because they can't, Now it's funny and people laugh and they shake it off and they get up, but
it also should be like a big wake up call.
Yeah, exactly. Well, skipping with same arm action should be a wake up call too.
We see that
every performance of it. I always think like, I feel bad because you didn't have a childhood, you know, you're like running around.
But I also point out the fact that like people just don't move anymore, and so when you don't move for 40 years, you literally forget, right? Your body just forgets, and teaching these fundamentals just seems so important. So, Dust, I don't want to take up too much of your time. You've been awesome already, but I just want to, I'll let you sort of tell people where they can get this. A couple things I want to just sort of wrap up with. Like, one is, like, guys, if you're, like, wondering some of the stuff that Dose talked about, like, it was really cool to see him. I mean, I've seen him do it perform better, but, like, when we did this in Tokyo and he did it, it was even more eye moment because you're talking about people that have never seen this stuff before, and we had all these different age groups, and it was really cool, like, seeing everyone being able to implement this and do this, and, like, people were working, like, and they loved it. I thought the number of smiles that we saw was pretty cool. I think I still have the video. I'll post in the blog if I can find it. So it just showed me how accessible this is to people. But also this what you talked about too, just with all this multidirectional stuff. Like, we're still sort of built. I want to drive home to people is like you're doing so much more than just making people work. Like, I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with aerodynamic intervals. I mean, Dose and I both love that stuff, and you know, sled work. But there's just something, like another layer when we talk about doing this, like, you know, you talked about the lateral movement and there, you know, glute training is so popular now, but like people don't even realize your glutes are not meant for you to lay on your back and thrust your hips up in the air. Like, that's not what they do. And then on the other hand, like, people are getting more like, you know, you and I are seeing the pendulum come back where running is now a thing again. But again, people just want to run in straight lines. But, like, that wasn't what our body was designed to do. Yeah, we can do that. But, like, the highest level of stuff is being able to navigate, you know, Gary Gray talks about navigate gravity, navigate your center of mass over your base support. When people talk about balance, they're talking about this stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure. It actually reminds me of, like, I hate running shoes because they're so impractical for anything but running straight. Right?
Great
so like,
point.
You, like a hardcore runner, if you're like, I like them because they're comfortable. We like them because they're comfortable. But the minute you try to like those Nikes that I have, the minute anything laterally, you're gone. Like it's right.
Zion Williamson.
We got a Zion and we're blowing out. So like, that to me that bugs me and it bothers me because I think probably 50% of the people, like even this past weekend in Bloomington, you know, we were running through some of the reactive drills, and probably 50% of the people had on like running shoes. Like, remember when everybody had cross trainers? Like everybody just wore cross trainers. It was like the utility shoe. Like, what if I got to run, or what if I have to lift something? What if I have to go sideways? Like, you know, and I think that's kind of changed. So, and more so for comfort, or that, or, you know, the kids nowadays, they're just all wearing the flats, you know, the Vans kind of shoes that don't really give you anything, really, I guess. Right. I don't know what they, I can't wear those because there's no arch support in them, but it's, this stuff truly, you know, obviously, like, I'm biased, but this stuff truly kind of, you know, lays itself over every population, every kind of training. You know, I don't think, you know, you can't be against it. Like, that's the thing is, you know, sometimes you can say, well, this training doesn't make sense, or this training, you know, they're pushing this specific piece of equipment or something. Like, this is movement, right? So, like, this is movement. The chaotic aspect of it adds that layer on that's going to help performance, you know, aspects for athletes. But it's also going to make things tougher. Like, well, the minute the brain starts going, like, I always do that. Like, I'll give people, like, it's either going to be a clap, a whistle, or a go, right? You're not going to react. All of a sudden, the cranks start going in the brain, and then it gets more demanding on them, and it gets more tiring. They get more of a tired effect. So you got that conditioning aspect to it. You got the fun kind of competitive thing that you can get going with General Pop. And you have a really, really practical, functional aspect to having this huge emphasis on load absorption, right, in Chaos 2.0. I mean, that's huge. I think I said in my opening statement in the videos, like, this is – I'm hanging my hat on this. You know, like, I'm obsessed with brakes. You know, like, I think Cosgrove's the one that said, you know, great to have a huge engine, but how fast would you drive your car if you knew you had crappy brakes?
Right.
Right? So, like, that's the biggest takeaway, and that goes – or any population, because now it becomes just a potentially life or death for somebody like my mom.
Right.
If she has bad breaks, you know, I've seen her take a spill before and stepping off of a bus, you know, coming off that last step and misjudging the distance, like not having the strength for that single limb to absorb that load when she didn't know she was going to have to stop right away. And then she goes down, you know, so these are, you know, I can't emphasize that enough. We talked about like how many trainers don't even have that aspect, you know, that component dialed in and programmed in their training power. But people think power, that doesn't make sense. I don't need grandma to be able to jump high. Like, no, that kind of goes against our point, right? Our point is I'm more obsessed with grandma's ability to slow down,
right,
you know, and stop. So, and that in itself is training power, right? And we just kind of never think of it that way. We think about force production all the time instead of that absorption.
Yeah, and to be honest, guys, like, you know, if I sound excited about it, I genuinely am, because I mean, Dose will tell you, I think it was a few months ago, I'm like, dude, we got to do more of your chaos stuff. We got to get more of your chaos stuff out there. And at the time, I didn't know you were working on this project, and you're like, oh, I got something in the works. So I'm really excited that you have this. And then just the last thing I'll say is, like, here's one of the coolest parts. This is not equipment-based heavy. Like, you can do this with almost nothing. And so I think it's one of the cool things to removing obstacles from people and playing with this program. So, Dose, I'll finish with this. Like, tell us a little bit about, like, what is the program that you just came out with? Like, what's in it? Like, how can people, you know, get it and all the good stuff?
So Chaos 2.0, I mean, we were so excited about, you know, the production of it. It's just, you know, Pixel Mob and the guys
sharp
over there.
Yeah.
Everything that they've done, they did my program design stuff and all that. Like, they've done all the athletes acceleration and the NSPA stuff. So they're the best in the biz. So from that respect, it's great to see different angles of drills. So what I do, what this is about, I want to say it's about 90 minutes of actual video from our warm up, from our prep stuff. We have a whole module of just the, you know, my kind of go to's as far as strength in the weight room. You know, obviously max lunges in there, but some of the kettlebell stuff, some of the core stuff, the explosive stuff is all in there. Then we have the progression, right? We have the progression of close to open drills. The open drills from the, you know, the simple reaction to a stimulus to multiple stimuli to physical rabbit drills, you know, physical cues, verbal cues, visual cues, chaos in a box. We kind of go, you know, we kind of keep progressing. So you may never get to that point to some of those drills because they're kind of crazy, but maybe you kind of hang your hat on, like I said, a lot of that frontal plane kind of stuff where we're just kind of moving and making people react to a simple, you know, visual command or something. I have a really detailed lecture. Like, so we videoed, I think it's around 70 minutes of just me going through the research and talking about the background, how we came up with all these things, some of the drills, you know, the importance of obviously the power, the force reduction, and, you know, production and reduction. So we have all that kind of combined into one kind of take it as you want kind of thing. And the modules are broken up into specific, you know, closed drills or like simple chaos, you know, multiple level chaos. So I think it's real user friendly as far as just being able to bounce around. Like, some people will, I would always suggest like going through that lecture, and we have it on just an audio file too. So it's almost like a blog post kind of thing where I'm just talking, so you can kind of listen to it in the car or whatever, to just kind of understand. I think that's important because sometimes people want to jump to the drills. They don't really understand like what's going on. I think you have that. You guys have a lot of that with the stuff that you guys have. Oh, I drill, not understanding why we did that drill and not understanding there's a lead up to this drill. Like, this isn't, you know, it's all bells and whistles on, especially on social media. So, right now you can, if you just want to Google chaos training or chaos 2.0, it should pop up, but you can go right to athletesacceleration.com and all the stuff's on there, and chaos should be on the forefront. It's going to come out the day after Memorial Day. So, we're pretty excited. You know, if you're following me at all on social media, I've been posting a lot about it. And so I'll have links and all that kind of stuff too in my bios, but, we're stoked, you know, and honestly, it's super cheap. And it's like, I think it's a no brainer for anybody working with athletes. I've had so many coaches hit me up. I can't wait for it. Come on, I want to use these drills with my soccer, my travel team and things like that. So, but like I said, even from a general population standpoint, I think it just gives you another tool, you know, another, you know, tool in your arsenal for training, for conditioning, to work on that power as well. So I think, yeah, we're pretty stoked.
Yeah, and you know what? It's, you know, one reason, obviously, just because I appreciate all that you've done for our program, but, I mean, it fits so nicely with what we're about with DVRT. Like, people hit me up all the time to promote things, and usually I'm like, nah, but this is obviously right in our wheelhouse. So I really encourage people to check it out. I'll have a link for you guys. You guys can just click it over. I mean, you guys know Coach Dose does nothing but quality work, and when he told me it was going to be under $50, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is just a no-brainer. So I really hope you guys take an opportunity to check it out. What's that?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, when we decide the price point, I'm always like, oh man, like, that's so low, you know, like, you know, but yeah. But at the same time, I think it'll get into a lot more hands too as well.
Absolutely.
With people understand that the work that was put in, especially with the production of it, man, it's, that's crazy. Like, Pat doesn't do anything,
no,
you know, half-hearted. Like, he goes for it. Pat ends up losing money on a lot of his things that he does, especially just putting on a social, you know, and things like that at these events. I'm like, I'm working the budget on some of these things going, do we really need a $2,000 bar bill right now? You know, that kind of thing. So, but yeah. So we're stoked, man. And thanks for talking to me about it.
Absolutely, and thank you for you know, taking the time to really explain it and open up people's eyes to, I think, some really important concepts that just don't get discussed enough. And I hope you guys will thank Coach Dose for so much of his hard work by supporting him and checking out the program. Like, it's a win-win, guys. Like, I'm genuinely excited by this stuff because it's stuff that I fundamentally grew up with as a coach, and I tried to employ with my own clients when I thought more about being athletic, not necessarily just even an athlete. And I think it's just a solution to a major aspect that not enough coaches talk about. So, guys, check out the link, support Coach Dose, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you so much.